there was a radio show host in Washington, D.C., and it was Christmas time, and he decided that he would ring around the various ambassadors in Washington to find out what they would like for Christmas. Now, the first to pick up was the French ambassador, and he thought about it, and he said, "For Christmas, I would like world peace." Next, they rang around again, and the Chinese ambassador picked up, and he thought about it, and he said, "I'd like an end to world poverty and world hunger." And thirdly, they rang, and they rang the British ambassador, who wanted to appear modest, and he said, "I would like a pair of slippers and some aftershave for Christmas." Well, I wonder what you would have asked for. What is it that you most want for Christmas? Have you written your letter to Santa? Well, I guess some of us love Christmas and love presents, love giving them, love receiving them. But some of us find Christmas to be stressful and painful even. In my house, it is a mixture. I love seeing family and friends, and I love the presents. But there is sadness too, my mother not there anymore. Well, however you feel about Christmas, for the next few minutes, I'd like to unpack for us the heart of Christmas, the best gift that there is. I'm not going to presume where you're coming from this afternoon. You may be here as a skeptic or an agnostic, or you may be here as a believer. But I'd like to introduce us to a person who is at the heart of Christmas. In fact, this is the person who gives Christmas its name, Jesus Christ. And so my aim today, for the next few minutes, is to show us, to help us start to see why King Jesus and his kingdom is the best gift that we could receive this Christmas, and why knowing him and meeting him will lead to real joy and even adoration. If you'd like to grab hold of your sheets once again and turn to that final reading that Rachel read for us so well, and we're going to spend the next few minutes looking at that together. Now, Matthew is one of the earliest accounts of Jesus' life from one of his closest friends, one of the eyewitnesses. And the contrast in this passage is very stark. There is a strong contrast between two kings. There are two kings, and there are two responses. Two kings, two responses. First of all, then, two kings. Look at sentence number one. You'll see there mentioned the first king, Herod. And he's a real king from history, as real as the kings of England. But this is a man who hated Christmas. He was worse than Scrooge. He was religious, but he didn't lead his people very well as a king. He didn't care for his people. And he was famously cruel and even dangerous. The first century historian Josephus puts it like this: he was a man who was cruel to all alike, and one who easily gave in to anger and was contemptuous of justice. The man's character had nothing human to recommend it. Shocking, isn't it? Nothing human about him. And as we read on in the story, we see why. As he has all of the male children below the age of two killed, he is an abusive, an awful, a horrible king. And there are plenty of leaders in the world today who are exactly like that. This is not the kind of king, the kind of leader that we want. But there is a second king in the story. And he is mentioned there in sentence number two. He is described there as the king of the Jews. He is God's king. Now, the wise men, not actually kings, but the finest mind, the scientists, the philosophers, all wrapped up into one, diplomats also, all wrapped up into one, experts in astronomy and astrology. Think Professor Brian Cox, Stephen Hawking. Well, they did the maths, they did the calculations, and they wanted to meet the king of the Jews, the king, God's king. Now, Herod, he should have known to expect this second king, God's king. He's a Jew, and he's read his Bible. And the Old Testament was full of predictions about him. So what does he do? Well, he checks things out. He calls his experts together and asks, "Where is the Christ God's king to be born. Now, Christ is not Jesus' surname, his family name. It is his title. It means that he is the promised king. The experts chat, and they agree. Yep, the Old Testament is really clear. In fact, Micah, to be precise, is really clear. We can tell you even the address and the postcode. Bethlehem, Judea. And Jesus, King Jesus, he is this person. And he is the king even of the whole world. This king of the Jews has a reach well beyond this tiny town, Bethlehem, to the finest minds of the east of Babylonia, Persia, to these wise men. He attracts the world's attention. And he does so even more than his birth with his life, with all he did, with all that he said, as this toddler grows up. In fact, his rule extends to the whole universe. He controls this star. This star brings these philosopher scientists to this place. It is, if you like divine sat-nav. Now, yesterday I asked my father, and I asked him, Dad, were there any stars that you noticed when I was born? And he said, Philip, you were an emergency C-section. We weren't exactly thinking about stars at that point. But this star points to the king because the king controls it. He controls the universe. He is king of the universe. Now, maybe as I say that sounds a little bit alarming to us. It's not as if world universal leaders have a very good track record. In fact, dictators are a bad thing. We distrust many leaders, even today. But this king is totally trustworthy. He's a wonderful king. And here is why. And it is there in sentence 6 of that reading. See what it says at the end. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. We're told he is a shepherd of his people. And maybe you hear that and you think, well, that's nice. I'm wearing my best Christmas jumper. That woolly jumper is keeping me warm. We're thinking of shepherds and sheep. And we think of countryfile. But actually, this shepherd is much more useful than that. Because back in the Old Testament, the king was supposed to be the shepherd, the leader, to lead his people. And the trouble was, they didn't do a very good job of it. They didn't care for the people. In fact, they led them away from God. And so God said he himself would be this shepherd that they really needed. The king, the leader that we all need. Jesus, a toddler by now in the story, grows up and claims to be king. God himself. And proves it by his life, by his words, by his works. A leader like no other. As we read on in the story, now I encourage you to do that, to take home with you a copy of Matthew's account of Jesus' life. There are some available on the way out. Well, we read on, and he deals with disease and disorder and even death. He heals the sick, he calms the storm, and he does it just like that. And he does it with real compassion. He loves people, amazing compassion. So much so that he would even lay down his life, his own life, for people, for his people. He's called the King of the Jews, and those words are nailed to his cross as he dies, in the place of people like us. Well, why does he need to do that? Well, sentence 3 says the city is troubled by Jesus. They feel exposed, if you like, because they know what they are really like, and so do we, if we're honest. We've lived as if this king, the king, doesn't exist. It's what the Bible calls sin. We live as if he's not there, and yet he offers himself for people like us. And so Jesus, he is the king, the shepherd king that keeps on giving, the gift that keeps on giving. He offers a fresh start, free of guilt, all of our failures dealt with, forgiven now. And in the future, a perfect world, free finally forever of all disease and death and destruction. So then, two kings, Two very different kings. Well, which do we want? Well, maybe we've still got questions. Maybe this is all new to us, and we've got questions about maybe the virgin birth or this star or other things. And if you have, we'd love you to join us for a course that we run, and we're going to be running in January, called Christianity Explored, where you can get answers to some of those questions and think things through for yourself. But actually, I don't think that this virgin birth or the star or many of the other things that maybe we might wonder about from this passage is the most surprising thing. Actually, I think there is something else much more surprising. Secondly, two responses. The responses are very surprising. First of all, there is Herod. He's the insider, he's part of God's people, and he knows all about Jesus coming, but his actions reveal what he's like. He's religious, yes, but he says he wants to worship this king, but not really, because he doesn't really want this king. He doesn't want Jesus. In fact, he is in the way, so he wants him out of the way, and he wants to have him killed. And he tries hard to do that, as we read on in the story. Well, I wonder, could that be us, our response? Not murder, but wanting him out of the way, finding him inconvenient. Frankly, Jesus, you're in the way of how I want to live my life. And yet we want all that he gives us, all the same. We want his wonderful gifts at Christmas of life and family and friends, but not him. That's the first response. But there is another one, and it is the response of their wise men. They are outsiders, not naturally part of God's people, but they are full of joy because of who he is and what he offers. And then we read this in verse 11. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. You can imagine Hollywood doing this and filming it. 10 or so wise men, that weren't necessarily 3. They come into town in smart suits. They drive up in Mercedes-Benz, black limos, and they have diplomatic number plates, and they turn up in this out-of-the-way town, in this nondescript house, and they all suddenly arrive, and the doors all open in unison, and they stride out together, and they walk up the driveway, and they walk to the door, and they knock on the door. And there is Mary, and there is Jesus, the toddler, wandering around with his toys. They walk in, and immediately all 10 of them, they're on their knees, they bow down, and they hit the deck. It's an astonishing scene. Can you imagine it? What they're doing here, you see, is acknowledging that he is the king. They're worshipping him, they're adoring him, they're recognizing him to be the king. And it is heartfelt, they're not going through the motions. They've gone to a huge amount of trouble. They've come from afar. And they show, as they give the best things, extravagant gifts befitting a king, gold and expensive perfume and spices. They're saying, with everything that I have, with everything that I am, I'm going to joyfully surrender to you and place my life in your hands. Well, I wonder, which is our response? Are we like Herod and rejecting Jesus? Or like these wise men adoring him joyfully? The day I did that for the first time and put my trust in him and put my life in his hands was a wonderful day. I received the best Christmas gift you could possibly ever have. Happy Christmas.